South African President Zuma survives the no confidence vote as expected. He has defeated the no confidence vote, and ANC members, as you can hear, are singing in the National Assembly. Now, the South African rand had been strengthening on the idea that perhaps he might not defeat the vote. It is now weakening, as you might imagine.
Well, the announcement in a nutshell is Disney's going over the top, direct to subscriber, but it's not just ESPN, it's also Disney and Pixar. They're going over the top across the board. BAMTech, of course, came off of Major League Baseball. It was owned by Major League Baseball and NHL. They had bought up one-third. They're taking up to 75%. Mm. They're still going to be partners with the NHL and MLB. As I understand it, they have a lot of the sports leagues who are committing their sports rights into this. So you'll be able to get on your iPhone, on your television, anywhere you want, by direct subscription, huge amounts of sports.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before. Thank you.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. It is Wednesday, and it's August 9th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Lots to cover this morning. A little later in the program, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen Dow 22,000. But what does it really mean to you and me and really a lot of people who have no viable input or action in the stock market? We'll have Heather Longin from The Washington Post a little bit later in the program. Coming up, we'll talk a little bit about the solar eclipse as well, how you might get the right gear if you're planning on doing a little photograph action for the eclipse in 12 days as it highlights southern Illinois. 12 days, 8 hours, 8 minutes, 7 seconds, according to SIU Carbondale, which has the countdown up. So we'll do that. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are off about 42 points this morning, looking for a negative open on Wall Street. NASDAQ futures are lower as well by about 39. S&P futures are lower by about 12 points. Around the globe this morning, stocks are generally lower in Asia, with the Nikkei off almost 1.5%, down 257 points. The Hang Seng is down about 97 points, and the Asian Dow is lower as well. Markets in Asia generally reacting to some of the news, around the globe, which you heard there in the opening montage. Donald Trump and North Korea trading threats over North Korea's nuclear program. Wall Street futures also reacted to that immediately after the fire and fury comment yesterday. On Wall Street, losses in healthcare and consumer-focused companies pulled U.S. stocks lower, snapping a 10-day winning streak for the Dow. Energy stocks fell along with crude oil prices as investors kept an eye on the latest company earnings in addition to the geopolitical news. In Europe, markets are also lower. The FTSE is off about 62 points, almost good for 1%. The DAX is off almost 1.5%. The CAC is off almost 2%, down 93 points. Oil is trading at $49.36 a barrel, which is up just about a third. Some of the other news that we've been watching while you've been asleep, United Arab Emirates, OPEC says a technical committee secured commitments from four oil-producing countries to bring their oil production back in line with previously agreed-to output targets. The organization said in a statement late last night that the United Arab Emirates, Iraq, Kazakhstan, Malaysia have agreed to fully cooperate with committees charged with monitoring adherence to production targets with the aim of reaching full conformity. Nissan Motor Corporation says it'll pay almost $100 million under a proposed settlement with vehicle owners affected by the Takata airbag recalls. The settlement would pay for new outreach programs to ensure Takata airbags are removed from 4.4 million affected Nissan vehicles. It would also compensate owners for expenses while getting their cars fixed, including some rental cars. Well, as we mentioned, the eclipse is just 12 days away now. August 21st is the big day. A lot of folks are going to use this opportunity to do a little amateur photography. I thought we'd bring in an expert on this. Bob King is the photo editor at the Duluth News Tribune in Duluth, Minnesota, but he's also an amateur astronomer and author of A Night Sky with the Naked Eye, how-to book about photographing the night sky. And he is with us this morning from Duluth. Bob, first of all, welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Likewise, Steve, and good morning to you.
Are you getting excited for the eclipse?
Yes, I am. I'm getting a little extra adrenaline these days. A lot of extra energy I'm finding because I'm anticipating, you know, getting out there to the path of totality.
Now, we should tell people you're based in northern Minnesota, Duluth, right?
Correct.
And you'll be going where to see the eclipse?
I'm going to be joining some family members, and we're going out to western Nebraska, just out in the middle of nowhere, basically, and we're hoping it'll be clear.
Yeah, everybody's got their fingers crossed for that. We wanted to talk to you, Bob, because you're the expert on how we photograph the sky, about what we should be getting ready for if we're planning on taking some pictures of the eclipse. What would be the first piece of advice you'd give us?
Well, first I'd have a solar filter handy if you want to take a picture of any of the different phases of the eclipse that aren't total. Because people might want to record the crescent sun or the half sun as the moon moves across it or do some kind of a sequence. So you'll definitely have to have a safe solar filter both for your eyes and for your camera. And then you can experiment. Any day the sun is out, you can take pictures of it to arrive at the correct exposure, and then just use that exposure when the eclipse comes, because the sun is basically the same every day.
The solar filter is a big part of this. I was doing a little shopping for myself recently, and some of these solar filters are pretty expensive for 35-millimeter cameras and some of the, what are they called, DSLR cameras. Is there a way that we can make these ourselves, or what would you suggest in terms of buying one of these filters if we do?
Well, you can make them yourself. There's a place, some places will sell something called Bader film, that's spelled B-A-A-D-E-R, and you can buy a sheet of it, and they'll often have instructions with it, or you can go online to find instructions on how to cut it out and then put it into a cardboard-style holder, and then you can attach that over your camera lens. Or you can do the same thing and just make a visual filter, too. But that film is available. You can also go, there's a variety of different websites where you can buy safe solar filters. They may have film available at one of the places I buy film at, filters at, is called RainbowSymphony.com. They're a big seller of solar filters. Also, Thousand Oaks is a good place.
Once we get this all set and ready to go, the filter we would need for the partial part of the eclipse, right? Not the totality.
Yeah, exactly. That you need because otherwise, you don't want to point your camera at the sun. You could damage the sensor if you do a direct photo. So it's very important that the camera be filtered when you're photographing any of the partial phases.
The other aspect of this, too, is, you know, probably the first time we've seen a total eclipse, at least, you know, here in Illinois, this smartphones. Everybody has a smartphone. What advice would you give for people using these smartphones? Is that a good way to snap photographs of the eclipse?
Well, you know, there's some really nice indirect ways of photographing the sun, too, and maybe the smartphone, it would be better for the smartphone to do that. For instance, you could take a sheet of thick paper or cardboard and punch some small holes in it, and you can project the sun directly onto the side of an automobile if you have to, or a white sheet, and then you can photograph those little crescents right on the sheet of paper with your smartphone. You can also go underneath a tree, and you can use the tree, the little spaces between the leaves, they act as tiny apertures or lenses like pinhole cameras. And they will project the sun as a crescent right below them. So you can shoot it that way, too.
Do we need a tripod? Would you suggest having a tripod hooked up? And should we have a remote sensor with us, too?
Well, we're not talking iPhones anymore, right?
No, we're talking, well, either for. I guess you could use a little tripod for your iPhone, but mainly for the DSLR.
A lot of people like that because it's just easy to center the sun. You can follow the sun more easily if it's on a tripod. You're not hand-holding it. So, yes, I'd use a tripod for sure, especially if you're doing, like, a sequence. You can use that. But, I'd recommend it. But for an iPhone, again, I would go the indirect method. Another method I heard that was really kind of cool is you take a flat mirror, like a makeup mirror,
mm-hmm.
and you can reflect the sun off that mirror. And if you get it far enough, you can project it onto a wall or a T-shirt or something, whatever you want, and photograph that solar eclipse right on somebody's belly.
Now, Bob, listen, I have to tell you, when I was a kid, we used to use magnifying glasses in the sun to start little fires. That probably is not a good idea, is it? I mean,
no, I used to do the same thing. I was used to melt crayons and kill ants with those.
Yeah.
On childhood memories, right?
Right, right. Well, this is going to be a big deal for everybody. I saw on your Twitter feed recently you posted one of the first photographs, at least what we believe is one of the first photographs of an eclipse. This hasn't been happening all that often for us to get lots of photos. What can we learn from taking photos of the eclipse?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you can if you don't mind me saying this, I would recommend not shooting so many photos of the eclipse. I would not get wrapped up in too much photography. Do the partial phases, that's fine, but when it comes to totality, spend as little time as possible photographing it, because there are going to be 100,000 other people who are doing exactly that. They'll share it all online. Since it only lasts 2 minutes and 40 seconds, most of your time should be spent viewing the sun. Just look at it. Just soak it in. Sorry to take a turn there on you.
No, and you know, because
you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because the other part of this is when the totality happens, it's going to get kind of dark, right? I mean, so if you're not a real expert with the settings on your camera, you're probably not going to get anything usable anyway.
Well, you know, if you do have a camera set up during totality, and I know I'll have one, but I'll tell you how I'm going to set mine up. But if you do have it set up, you can shoot at such a great variety of different exposures. I mean, you can shoot a 60th of a second, and that will get you the inner corona and some of those little pink nubby things along the edge called prominences. If you shoot 1 second, you'll get a larger corona because it's pretty extensive, the sun's atmosphere. You can go to 3, 4, or 5 seconds. So you can get a picture at almost any exposure. So there's plenty of room for error.
The other part of this is we were getting ready for our interview today. You were telling me about your string of luck with eclipses. And the other part of this, too, is the weather. We all have our fingers crossed is that we're going to see a nice, clear, sunny day. But we should probably be prepared for the opposite, too, shouldn't we?
I know. You just sometimes have to. I mean, as we talked, I'd been to 6 different eclipses. This will be my 7th. The first couple of them were completely clouded out, and in one of them we just got bit up by black flies in the province of Quebec so badly that we had to flee the scene after the eclipse. It was cloudy, and then we just dashed to the coast to get out of there. So one thing for sure, eclipses will always be an adventure, no matter what happens, something very memorable. But sometimes if you're lucky, you know, if you're paying attention to the weather using your laptop or cell phone, you can find out maybe where it's clear and hopefully get to that spot in time, along with probably, unfortunately, 100,000 other people, too. So there could be a lot of traffic on eclipse day.
Yeah, we could end up chasing the eclipse across the United States. Bob, I know you
I don't want to do that.
Right, I know. I know you take a lot of pictures of the sky, and you're one of the experts at this. Having been to an eclipse before, what can we expect? I mean, I hear it takes your breath away. I've never seen one, actually.
Oh, you haven't?
No, this will be my first.
Oh, my gosh. I do hope it is clear for you. It really is a wonderful event. You can describe it all you want. You can read a lot of articles about it. But the kind of the creepiness of the light and the change going on, really, I really feel there's sort of a little bit of primal fear, like what is happening? And this is in the last couple of minutes before the sun is total, when it really starts to get dark. You start to feel it. And then during totality, it's just, I don't know, there's nothing like it. Just the type of lighting around you, and, you know, you've got that big moon shadow. You could actually see that thing kind of approaching from the northwest, sweeping overhead slowly. Then it's total, and then it takes off to the southeast after the eclipse is over. I mean, there's so many aspects to it. I could go over. I've got a little list here of things to look for.
Let's do it. Let's go through them.
All right. Just one last thing about photography. Excuse me a second. One good thing to do, your listeners may want to try this, is to get a hold of an intervalometer. Are you going to be using that yourself?
I do not have an intervalometer, no.
I know, it's a big word, but what it does, it's like an old-fashioned cable release on a camera. You hook it up, you tell it to take the pictures for you, and it snaps away while you just look at the sun. It is a great little device.
So that would let you focus on enjoying the moment of it, and your camera will do all the work.
Yeah, you just let the camera do its thing, and it'll take pictures every few seconds, clicking away in the background while you're there just looking up at the sun, either with your naked eye or with a pair of binoculars, which I also strongly recommend to bring. Great during totality. But here, do you want me to go over the list?
Yes.
I've got a few things. Okay, the first thing that you can look for, even before totality, is the planet Venus. Because as the sky gets darker, in the last 10 minutes or so, you're going to look off to the right. You'll see a bright star there, about three-fifths to the right. That's Venus. And then the other things are, before totality, are shadow bands. And these are really cool things. It's kind of a, they're faint, they're kind of rapidly moving bands that crisscross the ground. And that's from the sun shining through the eddies of air as it narrows down to a tiny sliver. All right, and then there's the diamond ring that you would see as the last bits of sunlight kind of work their way between the valleys and the mountains of the moon. And then, hold on, let me catch my breath. I'm getting too excited here.
Yeah, and that one, that last one almost, I think, is from that original photo that I saw on your Twitter page that I mentioned earlier. You can almost see that in that photograph, too, where it almost looks like shots of fire coming out from those crevices.
Yeah, it really is a beautiful thing. And here's something, too, for listeners to be aware of. You're going to be holding your solar filter at the sun that entire time until you see that brilliant diamond ring effect. You'll see this last chunk of sunlight right at the edge of the blackening moon. And then when that begins to fade and break up into tiny dots, right before, just a moment before the sun is completely covered, you can pull your filter away and have a look. And then a second or two later, the moon will cover the sun. And that's when you really get the big show, because you get to see the sun's corona at that time, the outer atmosphere. That's the thing you never get to see except during a total eclipse. So you have this beautiful pearly corona. And if you take a pair of binoculars and you point it at the corona, you might see some beautiful structure in it. It's almost like a filings around a magnet where you sprinkle iron filings, because it's kind of powered and controlled by magnetic fields coming from the sun. So it has these really cool swirls in it that you can really only see through binoculars. So keep those handy. You'll also see the prominences, those fiery flames of hydrogen right along the edge of the moon. And those are also good in binoculars or a small telescope. And then there's just the whole feeling of the lighting. And the way to describe that is sometimes it's been called like a full moon, but it's actually brighter than a full moon because the corona is as bright as the full moon. And when you look around you, you'll see the darkness overhead. That's the shadow of the moon. But off to your sides, you'll see beyond where the sun is totally eclipsed, 35 miles, 40 miles away, and that's still lit up by the sun. So you see this twilight effect to the left and to the right of the sun along the horizon. And that light comes filtering in along with the corona, and it actually provides enough light to find your way around. It's not a problem.
Yeah. It's not hard to believe, not hard to think of back in the day, in some of the pre-civilization days, where this was a frightening thing for people to see. It almost sounds like science fiction, but wow, this is reality.
I know. There's a certain rawness of it, and the fact that you are in alignment between these great cosmic bodies. You've got the sun, the moon, you and your eyes and your little brain, and then your feet on the earth. You guys are all in line just for those couple of minutes. And it does something to your soul. I mean, it really is exciting. People often just break out in applause. Some people cry. I mean, it is one of the rarest, of course, and most wonderful things you can experience in nature. I mean, if you want to be touched by the cosmos, this is the place to be, the event to see.
Well, Bob, I'm going to have good... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I've still got two more things. Do we have a second?
Absolutely, yes.
We're going to finish up totality. Okay, so you will see that when you're getting close to the end of the total phase, you'll see the light change. You'll see the shadow moving off to your left, and you'll see the encroaching brightness coming up, you know, as the shadow is departing. And you'll know when the sun is about ready to pop out again. You've got one last chance to see the diamond ring effect. That's when the moon just begins to move away from the sun. You see these little tiny beads along the edge. As soon as you see those, put your eclipse glasses back on. You don't want to damage your vision. That's crucial in all of this. And then you can stick around and, I don't know, hug your friends and party after that. It is an extremely, my experience has been that it's an extremely emotional event. And, you know, usually you go out, you'll see an eclipse of the moon, for instance, and you'll say, gosh, that's awfully beautiful. But an eclipse of the sun is an order of magnitude different than that. Just something remarkable.
Well, Bob, I'm going to have good thoughts for weather in your part of the woods, and hopefully it'll be sunny in Carbondale as well and here in Illinois, and we can compare notes when it's over.
I would love to do that. Do you have yet a second? There is a warning I'd like to just alert your listeners to.
Absolutely.
There's a story going around. It's on the Sky and Telescope website. It's been on a couple of other places about fake eclipse glasses being sold. These are not up to spec, and they could damage your eyes. Most of the stuff that you would get, like through the libraries, there's a lot of public libraries handing out glasses, all safe. Places like Rainbow Symphony, Thousand Oaks, all safe. But there is a list. If people are concerned in any way, they can go to the American Astronomical Society website, and they have a complete listing of all of the safe, approved eclipse glasses. And I'll just give you part of the address. It's called eclipse.aas.org. So if an amateur astronomer is giving away glasses, those are good too. But there are some people trying to make a buck here by selling unsafe glasses.
And the best way to check these out would be to, if you get them in advance, just kind of take a little peek and see if they block out the sun like they should, right?
Exactly. You know, if you can see your lamps through them in the house or anything else, chances are that's not a good thing.
Okay.
You know, you want to be sure everything looks black except for the sun.
Well, Bob, it's always good talking with you, and happy Eclipse Day, and we, again, look forward to comparing notes with you when it's over.
That would be fantastic, Steve, and I really appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Bob King, a.k.a. Astro Bob. You can follow him on Twitter, AstroBob_BK. He's the photo editor at the Duluth News Tribune in Duluth, Minnesota, and an amateur astronomer. The author of Night Sky with the Naked Eye, How to Find Planets, Constellations, Satellites, and Other Night Sky Wonders Without a Telescope. We will continue our conversation with Bob after the bell this morning, and we'll post the rest of our interview in the podcast of The Opening Bell at WGNRadio.com later on today.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 540. Glad you're here for our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. The Dow recently surged past the 22,000 mark for the first time, but you might be surprised just how few Americans that impacts. Heather Long is an economics correspondent with The Washington Post and regular contributor here to The Opening Bell. She's with us this morning from Washington. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning, Steve.
Before we go any further, congratulations on your move to The Washington Post. Well deserved.
Thanks. I am now in Washington, so in the middle of all the action.
Right there in the middle of it. Well, you wrote a really cool piece recently about how few Americans really are impacted by the stock market, this Dow 22,000. How few are we talking?
Yeah, this number always surprises me, Steve. Basically half of America has $0 in the stock market. And people always say, no, that can't be right. What about their 401k? What about pension funds? Even when you take all of those into account, it's still half of America has $0 in the market.
And so when we see everybody sort of touting this milestone for the Dow, how is it impacting or resonating or not in the places where people are looking for work and still waiting for that turnaround?
Right. I mean, that's this huge reminder that Wall Street is not Main Street. And a lot of presidents have had to learn this the hard way. You may remember in the depths of the Great Recession, boy, did that stock market start going up a lot sooner, many, many months, if not years, before we started to see any turnaround in jobs. And we still are waiting for that turnaround in wages. So there's a real disconnect between how Wall Street does and the stock market hitting these records and what's actually happening on Main Street. So I keep telling people the real number to watch is that wage number. Are we finally going to see wages go higher? And so far, we haven't really seen that happen yet.
And why do you think that is, Heather? I mean, we've had a couple of discussions about that on this program and have several different opinions, but what would you say it is?
Sure. It's a huge debate about why, despite these so many corporate earnings, so many companies are clearly very profitable right now. So why aren't some of those profits making it down to the workers? And there's a number of theories about why that is, but the reality is there's just such a greater share of the wealth in this country that's going to shareholders. And unfortunately, even among the half of Americans that do own stock in this country, the bulk of the gains goes to a very small percent. So the other factoid that I keep in my head is 80% of the market, so the vast majority of the stock market, is owned by about 10% of shareholders. So, again, most of those gains going to a very, very small number of people.
There is the economics part of this story, too, but there's also the politics part of it. Is there a danger here that the Trump administration might fall into the same trap that they were accusing the Obama administration of being in when they were on the campaign trail?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. It's hard to remember, but about a year ago, when he was campaigning, Trump was actually warning about a stock market bubble, warning that the market was too high. And at that point, we hadn't even crossed Dow 20,000, let alone Dow 22,000. So there's kind of that. He's reversed course on his rhetoric there. But also, I think the even bigger maybe concern if you're in the White House or if you're on the Trump team is that markets also go down. And so while he's really owning and holding up this as a sign of success to see how much the market has gone up, and it's up over 20% since his election, what is he going to be equally as talkative? What's he going to say when the market goes down, whether it's a correction, sort of a 10% drop, or whether it potentially sells off even more than that?
Yeah, he also, I remember him calling the jobs numbers a hoax as well back when he was campaigning, and he was taking credit for creating jobs. I mean, the economy is creating a lot of jobs, about 1 million since he was elected. It's kind of hard. Again, in that situation, he's going to have to take the credit when it goes down, too, isn't he?
Probably, although the job market is definitely doesn't seem to be slowing down anytime soon. It really is pretty amazing numbers where we are this 9 years into an economic expansion cycle. So, again, the big question, yesterday we saw news that a record number of job openings in this country. That's also a good sign, 6.2 million job openings. And we actually only have, at the moment, 7 million unemployed people. So you sort of sit there and think, well, why can't we just solve this problem overnight? We've got about one job opening for every one unemployed person. But unfortunately, there's a lot of factors there that's holding the people looking for jobs back from actually getting the openings that are there.
And one of the things I enjoy about reading your work in the Post is this the Wonk blog. You sort of had the multiple choice on your Twitter feed yesterday. Why that's the case? Is it A, picky employers, B, low wages, or both A and B? I didn't get to see the answer to that, but I'm guessing it's both A and B, right?
Yeah, and probably C. I could have included some more more factors. a lot of people pointing out, I put it as picky employers, but the flip side of that is people saying, look, the workers don't always have the skills. And our own paper and other outlets have done a number of pieces lately about how, I hate to say it, sometimes people don't show up to work on time. They don't want to work weekends. If they say verbally, they'll tell you on the phone, oh, I'll take anything, I'll do anything. But then when it comes down to it, that's not always the case. So, there's arguments on from the managers are frustrated, and some workers are also saying, hey, I am a good worker, but somebody won't give me a chance. So you're kind of seeing complaints that seem pretty legit from both sides.
Yeah, we had a story earlier this week, too, about how in Wisconsin, the plant there has seen so many problems with manufacturing workers on the line calling in sick, or one even got arrested, that they've actually hired two robots that's the danger here, isn't it? That if workers, human workers, don't show up, there'll be more robots.
Exactly. Well, that certainly, it feels like it may start exacerbating the trend. For a while, the robots were just cheaper, and that's why people were interested. But now you see these companies bringing in their first robots, just like you're saying, because they're arguing the opposite. They're arguing, I can't find enough good workers.
All right. Well, Heather, good talking with you again. And again, congratulations on the new gig at Washington Post.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
You too. Heather Long is an economics correspondent for the Washington Post and a columnist for the Wonk blog there. You can read her work at WashingtonPost.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
551. Welcome back to The Opening Bell on today's Wednesday broadcast. We'll check the Associated Bank Market Desk numbers. A little weak opening later on Wall Street when the opening bell rings at 8:30. Dow futures are off 29 points. NASDAQ futures are off about 31 points. S&P futures are lower as well. Gold and silver are both trading higher. Let's get more on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, weather was a factor in the soybean market at the Board of Trade yesterday. Some concerns about dry patches in parts of the Midwest, and the latest weekly drought monitor showing 36% of Iowa in moderate drought, 7% in severe drought. And one analyst said traders have also begun to worry that cool temperatures expected in the Midwest this month could extend the growing season. That would leave soybeans vulnerable to an early frost. So there's plenty to worry about. Soybeans, though, did get a little traction from a Chinese announcement that July soybean imports in China surged 30% to their highest level on record back to 2010. And July imports hit 10 million tons, topping the earlier highest level set in May at 9.5 million tons. So at the end of the trading day, the soybean market ended higher, but the corn and wheat market ended lower. Livestock futures, Mercantile Exchange, the cattle futures continue to come under pressure. The August live cattle contract down 42 cents yesterday, and the August feeder cattle contract down 60 cents a hundredweight. Lean hogs, for the most part, higher. Again, Wisconsin State Fair continues through Sunday, and tomorrow, opening day at the Illinois State Fair. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuels.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of other stories we're watching for you this morning. Belgium's agriculture minister says Dutch authorities knew in November that eggs in the Netherlands were contaminated with an insecticide and failed to notify their European partners. Dozens of producers in Belgium and Netherlands are being investigated for eggs containing fipronil, which is dangerous to human health. Belgium signed signaled on July 20th that it had found that contamination. Publicly is when it first announced that. Agriculture minister there says that Belgium's Food Safety Agency has official documents that indicated the presence of that pesticide in eggs by the end of November of last year. The United States Postal Service is trying to figure out how to counter Amazon drones and deliveries by golf cart. The U.S. Postal Service counting on a different strategy to stay competitive. It is seeking more freedom to raise prices for mailing letters as well. After a 10-year review, the Postal Regulatory Commission appears likely to grant the Postal Service power to increase the cost of stamps beyond the rate of inflation. It would be the biggest change in the pricing system in nearly a half century. A decision is expected next month. The price of a first class stamp now is at 49 cents. That could jump, though it's not known how much. Postal Service is trying to stay financially afloat as it seeks to invest billions in new delivery trucks to get packages more nimbly to American homes. Disney is launching a streaming service for animated and live-action movies in 2019 as it navigates a changing media landscape. It'll also launch an ESPN sports app in early 2018. The Disney app will be the exclusive source for streaming animated and live-action Disney and Pixar movies, starting with 2019 releases like Toy Story 4 and the sequel to Frozen. In 2019, Disney will also end an earlier deal with Netflix, which gave the popular service exclusive access to the company's films for streaming. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Wednesday, August 9th. Looking ahead to today's economic news, the Commerce Department will release wholesale trade inventories for June. Also today, investors are looking ahead to an appearance by Bill Dudley, the president of the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank of New York, for signs of the Fed's outlook on the economy. They're also looking for confirmation that the Fed is sticking with plans for a possible December interest rate hike. Second quarter metro home prices will be released. The State Department's annual report on international religious freedom is due out. And this is the 72nd anniversary of the U.S. dropping the atomic bomb on Nagasaki. The explosion of Fat Man came 3 days after the first ever atomic bombing on Hiroshima and resulted in the Japanese surrender at the end of World War II on the August 15th. The plutonium-based weapon that was dropped on this day killed nearly 74,000 people in Nagasaki.